In my life, the earliest example of that I remember of what I would call courageous love was from the Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen. Archbishop Hunthausen was the Archbishop of Seattle from the time I was born to when I was 15. And sometimes when people don't know Washington State, I say I grew up near Seattle. But if you know Washington State, and then I tell you that I grew up in Port Angeles, Washington, you'll know I grew up nowhere near Seattle. It was a small town about 2.5 hours outside of Seattle. So Archbishop Hunthausen was my archbishop as I grew up Catholic. I'm told he was an advocate for the poor and for peace his whole life. But it's a memory from when I was about 7 that has stuck with me. My mom, a lifelong Catholic, one day was wearing this button that said, "I support the Archbishop." "What's that?" I asked her. And she responded simply, "He held Mass for the homosexuals, and people are very upset." It was 1983. Very upset was surely an understatement. But in that moment, when I was 7, I didn't hear the upset part. I only heard my mom saying the word homosexuals and that my archbishop had held Mass for them and that she was good with that. 15 years later, when I was terrified to come out to my parents, that button flashed in my mind and it gave me hope and courage. And surely that button had something to do with their eventual love and acceptance. Which all of that makes me so grateful for that man and for his sense of call and duty. He must have been so brave. I mean, received so much hateful criticism. It's astounding that he held his ground. I looked it up later to kind of try to piece back together my childhood memories with the actual reality. It turns out the cardinal did come to investigate. But he held his ground. How he was able to keep that clear about his call and the requirements of courageous love is astounding to me to this day. And inspiring. Courageous love as an idea has been integral to my formation as a Unitarian Universalist and as a minister. But still, when we picked up this phrase in our mission statement last year, it was with a certain leap of faith, as in, we generally think we know what courageous love means, and we even believe it's what we are meant for in these times. But also, in some ways, we didn't know. And it is the unknowing that was the leap of faith. Because you really can't know what courageous love is until it's asked of you. And by then, well, we already printed it on the t-shirts. This leap of faith reminds me of that point in the first book of the Lord of the Rings series when our hero, Frodo, confesses that he isn't feeling all that heroic. So much by then had already happened, but still there's so much more to come. Pain and loss, and he'd really just rather not. He'd rather just forget this grand adventure and this so-called hero's quest and go back to the Shire where he could enjoy a good second breakfast. As he tells his teacher, Gandalf, "I wish it need not have happened in my time." Gandalf responds simply, "So do I. And so do all who live to see such times." I used to read the stories about Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, or Galileo, or Charles Darwin, all these people who worked to call forth a truth, the truth in a world that was invested in its opposite. And I would feel simply inspired, eager to do what needed to be done to bring about the necessary change on behalf of justice and righteousness and compassion. In the last few weeks, however, I've started to feel a little less eager. as I've come to understand that answering the call of love, the call of courageous love, requires a capacity to live with a lot of pain and a commitment that persists through great sacrifice, a willingness to not turn away but to move towards what in regular times we might call danger. Whatever romantic notions I've had about the call of courageous love have, in recent days, fallen away. This past week, I started an online class on strategic nonviolent resistance, led by Unitarian Universalist theologian and ethicist Sharon Welch. You may recognize her name as the leading thinker on what she calls a feminist ethic of risk. She thought, she said, she'd have about maybe 40 or so clergy sign up, but there were over 60 of us there. She said as we started, "I guess you're all ready to take in a little theory to go along with your practice." So this is what I'm trying to offer you all today, a little theory around this idea of courageous love that we've been practicing and that we've said we will unleash. But let me start by dispelling any worries you might have that I'm about to get too heady by asking you to repeat after me. Going on a bear hunt.
I'm not afraid.
Oh, look, it's some wavy grass.
Can't go over it.
Can't go under it.
Can't go around it.
Gotta go through it. Okay. This is the perfect example of courageous love. No, really. In this little chant, we say what we're going to do. Going on a bear hunt. And this is like what I said last week. We're taking a stand. And then we give ourselves a pep talk to deal with our fear. I'm not afraid. Remember, keep cool. And then we pay attention to what is right in front of us. Stay connected, and we go through it. Can't go around it. Can't go under it. Gotta go through it. As Gandalf also says to Frodo, we do not get to decide which times we are born into. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. And to make such a decision, we must begin with the love in courageous love. This love is not squishy, romantic love, not even a love that is about liking the other. King reminds us that the English language limits our understanding of love. We have just one word to describe what it took the Greeks three to describe. They spoke about eros, that is the squishy, romantic kind of love. And also philia, which is the way you love your friends and does have to do with liking them at least most of the time. But courageous love is neither of these. It is instead the sort of love captured by the word agape. As King wrote, agape is understanding, creative, redemptive, goodwill for all. It is the love of God working in the human mind. It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. And when you come to love on this level, he says, you begin to love people not because they are likable, not because they do things that attract us, but because God loves them. Agape is that sort of love that formed our universalist tradition, that grace that is holding us all and transforming us. But in courageous love, this receptivity to grace meets our activity as it calls us to become its agents in the world. Courageous love pursues, to use another Greek word, eudaimonia. It's a good one. Eudaimonia. It means the highest human good, the flourishing of all life in wholeness and in health that Sean spoke about a few weeks ago. It is what in the Jewish tradition we would call shalom. Courageous love lives in that place where love of self, love of other, and love of the whole world come together into a love for all. Sharon Welch calls this overlapping place generative interdependence, meaning that creative, dynamic energy of that is born of all of us being in this together. Courageous love doesn't get stuck on just one way for us to go through this, but keeps discovering new ways, like dressing up as clowns to disarm white supremacists, or resurrecting Frederick Douglass on social media to protest presidential ignorance. Courageous love uses all the tools we can find, all the tools of art and dance and spiritual practices, all those things so that we might keep finding the way where there seems to be no way. This is one of the repeated phrases in the Hebrew Bible and one that is central to the theology of the Black Church, that God will make a way where there is no way. Or as the prophet Isaiah put it, "Behold, I am doing a new thing. Do you not perceive it?" So often the answer to this question when it comes to courageous love is sort of. Remember my archbishop? I mean, he surely had the sense that he was making a way where there had been no way. But also he couldn't have known all the many ways that was true. The ripple effects. How a second grader in a little logging town would carry his ministry in her heart for the next few decades until she herself would be telling the story of his courageous love to the congregation she serves. All of that he could not have perceived, but could only trust and have faith. Which brings us to the question of courage in courageous love. Now, there is a misunderstanding about courage, that it is a matter of fearlessness, that in order to act with courage, you must have no fear. But in these days, I'm pretty sure that would mean not acting at all. Anxiety is a normal response to living in abnormal times, such as these. Studies have shown that we act courageously not when we have squelched all fear, but when we are able to remain connected to some deeper sense of purpose, values, or vision, even in the face of fear. When we feel a sense of duty at our core. As poet-activist Audre Lorde said, "When I dare to use my strength in the service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether I am afraid." Courage looks fear in the eyes and says, "So what?" Courage says something matters more than this fear. Something motivates me to see beyond flight or fight, to persist with that creativity and humor and life-giving generativity, to claim a life of joy, to still have joy, even in the midst of heartache. At our workshop on courageous love that Eleanor was talking about, when we asked first for definitions of what this term means, the first word that came up was risk. Courageous love embraces risk, which is not something that people go around advertising when they want you to join their group, I know. Like, "Join us, we'll make your life less safe." But courageous love confesses there is no moral life that guarantees safety. I'm going to say it again. There is no moral life that guarantees safety. Courageous love knows that the only way to make people safe is through an ethic of domination and control, where some people, one or more, controls and dominates other people. And ultimately, if you want everyone totally safe, you'd have to cut off life entirely. It reminds me of the story of the Buddha before he became the Buddha. His parents, you may know, they kept him all locked up in the palace when he was younger so that he could be safe, so that he wouldn't know suffering. But then eventually he wanted to actually live. his life. And so he left the palace, and guess what? He was astounded to see there was suffering everywhere, which then became the main teaching of Buddhism. Life is suffering. Okay, it is a little more nuanced than that, but you get the idea. There is no way to allow, let alone unleash, human flourishing and ensure total safety. To imagine total safety is privilege and likely indicates that our safety is predicated on another's risk. Now, coming to understand this and our privilege and another's risk, all of this takes stepping out of our bubbles and stepping into the grace of an intentionally diverse community like this one in all of its messy imperfections. When courageous love and the following of the call of courageous love feels impossible and too much to bear, community reminds us that we don't have to do it alone. When the weight of courageous love feels like too much to carry, Sunday comes around again. And we can remember, it's not all on me. It's a shared task, this repairing the world, this unleashing courageous love. There's all these partners walking together, so much so we had to add a third service. We can hold the babies in the social hall and hear about somebody's new hearing aids or a new job. We can meet each other at the latest protest line and hug. And we can think, through all of this, we can keep going. Together, we can do hard things with love, courageous love. May it ever be so, and amen.